Matthew in Dallas, he had his hands full. I know that from personal experience. Well, I call your attention to 1 Samuel 31. We are going to finish this book tonight. I thought I was going to get two more messages out of the remaining verses, but I think I can finish the book tonight. And so for well over a year, we have been in 1 Samuel. I have looked at this book, read it often as we've gone through it, and I can tell you that it is a sad book in many ways. You have disappointment after disappointment. You have failed leadership with Samuel's boys like Hophni and Phinehas. You've got Samuel being rejected. He was God's man. And they said, no, we want to be like everybody else. We want a king. And so the old prophet, priest, and judge Samuel got kicked to the curb. Then you have Saul that starts, and there's a little glimpse of glory. There's a little glimpse of goodness. But it begins fading fast. We'll see that little glimpse here in just a few minutes. And then his leadership begins to wane. He ends up basically seeing a witch because God doesn't talk to him anymore. And I guess that was his only alternative. If God's not going to speak to you, you have to have the devil do it. And all of these bad, difficult, sad things happened. And God let them happen to prepare Israel for what they needed. And can I tell you that there are times that God allows things to come into our life because it's what we need, not what we really would choose, but it's what we need. I can just imagine a piece of pottery that is in its infancy. It's just wet clay. It's been pulled out of some kind of bucket or container, and it's got rocks in it, and it's got sticks in it, and little pieces of straw in it. And that potter begins to fashion that, and he begins to pull the rocks and the hard places out. He begins to take the sticks and throw them away, and he begins to squeeze and begins to knead the clay. And the pressure's put on. And if that old clay could talk, it would say, I don't like this pressure. I don't like being pulled and being tugged upon. And yet that's exactly what God let the people of Israel experience in 1 Samuel. Last week, we looked at Saul and his boys die. We saw them, that Jonathan was the first to be killed. Then there was two more boys that were killed. And finally, Saul was hit by the archers, the men that used the bow and arrows. And as he began trying to flee, he was being chased hard by the Philistines. And finally, he got to a certain spot on Gilboa, and he could go no farther, and he looked at his armor bearer, who some people think was Doeg, and he said, kill me. Don't let the Philistines abuse me. And he would not do it. The armor bearer wouldn't. And so the Bible says that Saul fell on his own sword. He committed suicide. You had another story that I mentioned over in Chronicles, and there was a man that actually is in 2 Samuel. There is an Amalekite that takes credit for killing Saul off after he was injured. He ends up forfeiting his own life because he touched God's anointed. But tonight we're going to look at Saul's humiliation, but then we're going to look at a group of men from a place called Jabesh Gilead. And I want you to see gratitude that we close the book with. And I want us to learn some things about this gratitude. That's what I'm going to mainly comment majority on this evening. We got through verse 6 last week, and so we'll pick up in verse number 7 tonight. If you look at 31, verse 7. And I know it's in my Bible. There we go. And when the men of Israel, now remember, you've had 3,000 of his men that were his choice servants, his choice special forces guy, they've been killed. And so when the reference in verse 7 says, when the men of Israel that were on the other side of the valley, that is a reference to the people of Israel that were non-combatants. They were people that had not been fighting, but they had been watching. And so you have the Valley of Jezreel, which is a very prominent place in Israel. There's a lot of farming that goes on in Jezreel today. But in ancient times and in the future, there will be a huge battle that'll be in that Valley of Jezreel. And so you've got these men that are on the other side of that valley, and they see what's happening. And then there's also a group that were on the other side of Jordan. That Jordan is not the land of Jordan, but it's the Jordan River. It's kind of like if you ever read Mark Twain's Tom Sawyer, Huck Finn, talks about the Mississippi. Well, everybody knows you're talking about a river, not the state. And so when it says the Jordan, it's the river that they're referencing. And you have people that were on the other side of the river, saw that the men of Israel fled and that Saul and his sons were dead. What did they do? They forsook the cities and they fled. And the Philistines came and dwelt in them. So you have these men, they see Saul and his men get defeated. And basically what you've got is you've got three tribes. You have the tribe of Zebulun. You have the tribe of Issachar. And you have the tribe of Naphtali. Those three tribes were in the area that this battle was taking place in. When they saw that Israel had been defeated, they grabbed as much as they could get, they got their families, and they left to flee from that area, and the Philistines geographically began to expand immediately. So that's the battle that we see in verse number 7. In ancient times, when a battle would be won or lost, you know whose honor was at stake? The gods of those people. If your God won, that meant that your God was a stronger God. But if your God lost, that meant that your God was inferior. And so when Saul and his boys get killed, and his 3,000 choice men get killed, all of a sudden, God looks like he's a nobody. God looks like he's weak. And the gods of the Philistines, which we will see in a moment, they are the ones that are getting the praise. And so you've got God's name at stake, and God's glory is at stake. And yet, because Saul, which was supposedly God's king, he's dead, now you've got the name of the Lord being besmirched. And so, the idols have won. If you look at verse number 8, it says that it came to pass on the morrow, in other words, tomorrow morning. You had a battle that lasted all day. The sun goes down. They know that the enemy is dead. The bodies are laying out in the valley of Jezreel. And so they go, we'll do it in the morning. We'll just laugh tonight. We'll sleep tonight. And in the morning, we'll see what kind of spoil we've got. And so, in the morning, when the Philistines came to strip the slain, what are they doing? They're basically picking their pockets. They're taking the best clothing. They're doing anything they can to take a spoil from these dead bodies. It's a very common thing in ancient times. As a matter of fact, if you look at chapter 30, you see that David did the exact same thing. He took a spoil. And so, as they were stripping these bodies, it says they found Saul and his three sons fallen in Mount Gilboa. Now, I mentioned to you that Gilboa is not just one little mountain. It's kind of a mountain range of several little mountains. And so as they began searching, they knew that he was hit because they were following hard after him. They found Saul and they found three of his boys. And what did they do? Verse 9 tells us. They cut off his head. Now you say, why would somebody do something that barbaric? Because if you cut the king's head off or the champion's head off, that meant again that your God was the better God. And so, did Saul, was he not watching when David cut Goliath's head off and held it up for all to see? Well, now that same thing has happened to the king of Israel. And so they cut his head off and they stripped him of his armor. And they sent that armor into the land of the Philistines. And it says that they sent it into the land of the Philistines round about. Now, there were five Philistine cities. And I've mentioned them in several messages, and so I'll not go through them again. But you had these Philistine cities, and so evidently they were parading his armor around. And so it says that they were publishing it. They're going, hey, we've got Saul's armor here. And maybe they took part of it and sent it to one city like Gath or one part of it and sent it over to Ashkelon, you know, or any of the other three cities. And so what did they do? They began to publish it in the house of their idols among their people. Now, what was the temples and the god that the Philistines worshipped? Well, it was the goddess Ashtarte. She was a god of fertility. And so you have these people, and they are flaunting the armor of God, and they are showing it off in the temples of their idols. And they put the armor in the house of Ashtoreth, and I guess that's after they had flaunted it for several days. And then it says they fastened his body to the wall of Bethshean. Now Bethshean is an ancient town. It was redone by the Romans, but it had been around for a long, long time. I mean, we're talking 3,000 years ago from our time backward when this is happening. And so Bethshean is still a place to visit today. As a matter of fact, it's a national park. And they've got all kind of Roman Colosseums not the Colosseum, but a Roman-type Colosseum that's at Bethshean. It'll seat about 7,000 people. You've got a Roman colonnade, which was a main thoroughfare that had columns that had all kind of Roman architecture there. But even before the Romans built that, it was a place of some prominence near Mount Gilboa. And so they took the heads of Saul and his boys, and they basically took spikes and nailed it to the walls of that city. And so we see that the Philistines are swarming everywhere. Bodies are being plundered. Four bodies are now hung from a wall, or at least the heads are being hung from a wall. And we just see another disappointment. But as we get to verse number 11 through verse 13, I guess the writer of Samuel maybe gives us something that we can at least close the book on. And I would call this Jabesh-Gilead's gratitude. I love what these men of this of this tribe did. And it says that when the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead heard of that which the Philistines had done, what they had done to Saul, all the valiant men arose, went all night, took the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons from the wall of Bethshean, and came to Jabesh and burnt them there. This is the first cremation that is mentioned in the Bible. And they took their bones and they buried them under a tree in Jabesh, or at Jabesh, and they fasted 7 days. Now let me just comment a little bit on those verses that I just read. First of all, we see there's a gratitude and a thanks for what they have, I guess, experienced with Saul. I want you to hold your place here in Samuel 31, and I want you to go with me to chapter 11 of Samuel. Go back with me to chapter 11. Saul is just about to become king, right? It started out so great. And I want you to see what takes place in chapter 11 with Saul and with the men of Jabesh-Gilead. And Nahash the Ammonite answered them, the people of Jabesh-Gilead, "On this condition will I make a covenant with you, that I may thrust out all of your right eyes and lay it for a reproach upon all Israel." Now these guys are trying to strike a deal with the devil. Nahash is just as wicked as any Philistine that you've ever come across. He was just as wicked as Goliath. He's just as wicked as any of the kings of those city states. And so he said, "I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll make a covenant with you, but it's going to cost every one of you guys your right eye." And these men are thinking about making this covenant. And so, verse number 3, "The elders of Jabesh said unto him, 'Give us 7 days respite.'" In other words, give us a week to think about it. And so what did they do? They sent messengers into all the coast of Israel. In other words, that's like, well, let's just take a census to find out if we want to do that, if we want to all give up our right eyes. And said, "If there be no man to save us, we'll come out to thee, and then you can take our right eyes out." Then came the messengers to Gibeah of Saul and told the tidings in the ears of the people, and all the people lifted up their voices and wept. And behold, Saul came after the herd out of the field. In other words, he was just basically watching some sheep. "What aileth the people that they weep?" And they told him the tidings of the men of Jabesh. In other words, they're saying, "Hey, we don't have anybody that'll protect us. We're going to have to give our right eyes." Look at verse 6. "And the Spirit of God came upon Saul. And when he heard those tidings, his anger was kindled greatly." In other words, he got mad when the Spirit of God came upon him, knowing that these people were going to mutilate the men of God over at Jabesh. "And he took a yoke of oxen and he hewed them in pieces." He began to whack these oxen up. Why? Because he was going to send a message. "And he sent those hewn up pieces of oxen throughout all the coast of Israel by the hands of messengers, saying, 'Whosoever cometh not forth after Saul and after Samuel, so shall it be done unto his oxen.'" In other words, if you don't come and volunteer for this fight, we're going to come after you and we're going to take everything that you've got to plow with and we're going to kill them. And it says that the fear of the Lord fell upon the people and they came out with one consent. "And he numbered them in Bezek. The children of Israel were 300,000 and the men of Judah 30,000. So you got a pretty good standing army of men now. You got 330,000. And what happens? Well, they go out and they fight against the Ammonites under Nahash, and God gives them a great, great victory. And so the Lord hearkened unto him over in verse number 12. And so the people of Jabesh Gilead, back to chapter 31, the people of Jabesh Gilead had gratitude and thanks. Dale Ralph Davis said this: the debt of gratitude has its own ought. Now I want you to think about that for a moment. The debt of gratitude has its own ought. Have you ever had something happen and you had to respond because you ought to? You think about that a moment. Sometimes people don't understand, but there's something in your soul that says, I got to do something. I just got to. I've had situations come up when people in my childhood has died. I may not have seen them for 30 or 40 years, but when they died, I had to go because that's what I ought to do. Can you think of situations in your life when that's taken place? The people of Jabesh Gilead had an ought. In other words, they were thankful for what he had done 40 years earlier. He had taken upon himself to fight their battle for them and to basically give them protection, and they never got over it. And so we see that there was gratitude and there was thanks. If you look, you see several things about these men. First of all, they had long memories. 40 years is a long time. But if you thought about things over and over and over and over and over, it becomes ingrained in you. I can think of things that happened when I was in elementary school. Some of the things were good and some of the things were not so good. I remember my first grade teacher, Miss Ross. She was not a pleasant lady. Wasn't mean, but she really wasn't pleasant. I remember my second grade teacher, Miss McGuire. She was beautiful. I'd have married her when I was in the second grade. I mean, she was just gorgeous. My third grade teacher, I just did not like. Her name was Miss Helmy. I hope she knew the Lord. That woman looked like she had been hit in the face with a spade shovel. I mean, her face looked like a moon. That woman had the audacity to get me suspended for fighting with a guy named Jerry Herschel. I got 3 days suspension when I was in the third grade for fighting. My fourth grade teacher, I had great memories of her, Miss Lawson. But she wasn't a Lawson until after Christmas. She was a Strickland before Christmas, and then she got married. You know what she really impressed me about? She wasn't pretty like Miss McGuire, but the woman taught me how to square dance. Can I tell you how to do that today? Not a chance. But I knew when I was in the fourth grade I could do it. Now, I didn't have enough guts to ask one of the little girls to do it, but I was taught that in the fourth grade. Miss Kraut was my fifth grade teacher. Oh, she was a sweet lady. Sweet lady. My sixth grade teacher was Miss Zipperer. And she was a good lady. I was in the smart class. I was in Miss Zipper's class. We had another sixth grade class, and that was Miss Beck's class. That lady evidently could not see anything, because I had buddies that would jump out of her window. We didn't have air conditioning. We had big windows. They would jump out the window, which was only about that far from the ground. They'd go to Shorty's convenience store, get candy bars, come back, peek in the window, and if she wasn't looking, they'd jump back in and pass out candy. You couldn't have done that in Ms. Zipper's class. And so I have all these memories. And I think about things over and over and over and over again. Can I tell you that the people of Jabesh Gilead, they remembered what Saul did for them? Can I tell you that there are times when I've had people do things for me and I've never forgotten them, even though it's been 55 years ago? I've been asked to do the funeral of an aunt that lives in Macon. She hadn't died yet, but I've been asked to do it. But her husband died about a year and a half ago. And I remember when I was about 7 years old, my Uncle Edwin come pulling up in a 58 Bel Air. And he was a baseball coach in Macon. And he popped the hood of that Bel Air, and I had never seen anything so beautiful in my whole life. I saw brand new baseballs. And I saw brand new catcher's gear. I mean, it wasn't scratched up from where anybody had been wearing it. And he had bats in that back of that old Chevrolet. He started with a 27, and it went all the way through a 32-inch. I thought I was in heaven. And he said, "You play with all that." And I'm telling you, I spent the afternoon in front of my grandma's house just playing baseball. I'm thinking, man, that bat feels good. That catcher's equipment's nice. Look at all of those shiny baseballs. And he said, "Pick out the bat you want. Get you some baseballs. You can have that." Can I tell you, I never forgot my Uncle Edwin over that. And he did other things over the years, but I'm telling you, I never forgot the day the baseballs and the bats came. The people of Jabesh Gilead, they never forgot Saul. They did not forget. They had long memories. Not only did they have long memories, but they were spontaneous in the way that they reacted. It says that they heard that which the Philistines had done. In other words, they knew that they had cut Saul's head off. They had begun to abuse and mutilate the bodies of his boys. And because of those long memories, they began to think, we've got to do something. We can't have a man that treated us that good and protected us that well. We can't have him being shamed like this. And so all the men of Jabesh Gilead, they began a trek that night, and it was about a 20-mile trek. From Jabesh Gilead to Beth Shean is about 20 miles. And so they went to Beth Shean, and somehow under the cover of darkness, these men were able to get those bodies that were hanging on those walls, and they took them all the way back 20 miles to Jabesh. And as they got them back to Jabesh, the Bible says that they took their bones and they buried them under a tree. Now the Hebrew tells us what kind of tree that is. It's a tamarisk tree. Tamarisk was a tree evidently that was one of the favorites of Saul, maybe because it was so plenteous in the land of Israel. When Saul gave the word for all the priests of Nob to be killed, when Doeg took that sword and he began to kill those priests and their families, and only one was able to escape with the ephod, the Urim and the Thurim. When he gave that order, he was sitting in Gilead under a tamarisk tree. And so now he is going to be buried in some kind of urn under a tamarisk tree. But can I tell you that when he was buried, that the people of Jabesh Gilead finished their task? You say, what do you mean? Well, when the burial was over in Israel, if it was someone that was a dignitary, you didn't just stop and start your life over. I mean, there are times now when we have funerals and we may go back to the home for a day or so, but it's before long. I mean, we're just kind of back in the saddle again, so to speak. We're back at work, doing whatever we feel like we need to do. But in ancient Israel, according to the Talmud, there was a period of 30 days for a dignitary that you fasted and prayed. You remembered them. You showed respect for them. You had Moses over in the book of Deuteronomy. It says that the people of Israel, they mourned Moses for 30 days. That meant that the first 7 days was a hard fast. In other words, they ate very little, drank very little, just enough basically to survive as a way of showing their respect. And then the next 23 days were not quite as intense as the first seven. The people of Israel did the same thing for Aaron. You read that over in the book of Numbers when it says that they wept and they mourned over Aaron for 30 days. And so when you look at the latter part of verse 13, the people of Jabesh, they fasted 7 days. And so they are doing the honorable thing and finishing the task. If it was someone like a mother or father, you were considered to be in mourning for a year in ancient Israel. But here, this is probably the first of a 30 or the first 7 days of a 30-year period or 30-day period of mourning. And so that's the way that we close out 1 Samuel 31. Now, what was on display was the fact that God was being dishonored. Let me ask you a question. How high on your agenda is the glory of God? Is it something that maybe you do, maybe you don't? Every one of us are told in the scriptures that we're to do everything to the glory of God. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 31, it says, "Whether therefore you eat or drink, or whatsoever you do it to the glory of God." I don't think that we can read 1 Samuel and we can see that. I don't think that Saul lived for the glory of God. I think that when you see these defeats and you see these disappointments, I think that you see that the judgment of God basically has fallen upon the people of God. And I think that it all started because they wanted to be like the world. Give us a king like the other countries have. And Samuel said, "God's your king, but we want a human king." And when they began to ask to be like everybody else, the glory of God went by the wayside. And so, how high on your priority list is the glory of God? That's a question that I want to close with tonight, and I hope that it'll be something that you will maybe write down and that you'll think about it. When you go home tonight, are you going to treat your family to the glory of God? When you get up in the morning and you go to work, are you going to work for the glory of God? When you go to the grocery store, are you going to shop for the glory of God? What are you going to do to promote the glory of God? Now, I haven't decided if I need to just jump right into 2 Samuel or not. I'm still praying about that. But let me just say this. In 1 and 2 Samuel, in the Hebrew Bible, there's no division. It's just Samuel. And so, chapter 31 and 2 Samuel chapter 1 are basically a continuation. Now, we have the chapter division so that we can find things easily. But in a Hebrew Bible, you don't have that type of division here. You have just Samuel. You have Kings. You have Chronicles, but there's no first and second of any of those. And so I want you to pray with me about if I need to just go ahead and pick up 2 Samuel, because what you would see in this next section of Samuel is you'll see Israel begin to climb. And their king, who we all know as David, their king is going to subdue every enemy of God, and he's going to do it in a fashion that there's no doubt he's the boss. And God is going to be elevated by the way that David conducts himself. And so you pray with me about what the Lord would have us do if we want to continue in Samuel. And if you do, then we'll take another year and go through that book. All right? Let's stand together. The musicians are coming to the